I want to read chapter 42 of Isaiah. Then I'll ask Barry to lead us in a prayer, and we'll get into it. We're supposed to cover 42 and 43 this morning. We'll see how we do. I'm not going to make any promises, but I'm going to have the class really indefinitely until Josh gets back. We're all excited about the baby being born, and they're going to be in Arizona until they're cleared to leave the state and come back. So not sure exactly when that'll be, probably around 2 weeks. So you'll have me for Isaiah for the next several classes. So let's read the first half of Isaiah 42. Let's read down to verse 17, and then Barry will lead us in prayer. Behold my servant, whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delights. I've put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. He will not cry aloud or lift up his voice or make it heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and a faintly burning wick he will not quench. He will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not grow faint or be discouraged till he has established justice in the earth and the coastlands wait for his law. Thus says God, the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and what comes from it, who gives breath to the people on it and spirit to those who walk in it, I am the Lord. I have called you in righteousness. I will take you by the hand and keep you. I will give you as a covenant for the people, a light for the nations, to open the eyes that are blind, to bring out the prisoners from the dungeon and from the prison those who sit in darkness. I am the Lord, that is my name. My glory I give to no other, nor my praise to carved idols. Behold, the former things have come to pass, and new things I now declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them. Sing to the Lord a new song, his praise from the end of the earth. You who go down to the sea and all that fills it, the coastlands and their inhabitants. Let the desert and its cities lift up their voice, the villages that Kedar inhabits. Let the inhabitants of Selah sing for joy. Let them shout from the top of the mountains. Let them give glory to the Lord and declare his praise in the coastlands. The Lord goes out like a mighty man. Like a man of war, he stirs up his zeal. He cries out, he shouts aloud, he shows himself mighty against his foes. For a long time I have held my peace. I have kept still and restrained myself. Now I will cry out like a woman in labor. I will gasp and pant. I will lay waste mountains and hills and dry up all their vegetation. I will turn the rivers into islands and dry up the pools. And I will lead the blind in a way that they do not know. In paths that they have not known, I will guide them. I will turn the darkness before them into light, the rough places into level ground. These are the things I do, and I do not forsake them. They are turned back and utterly put to shame, who trust in carved idols, who say to metal images, you are our gods.
That we will focus also on the message of unity,
Amen. I want to apologize to Jerry for not giving him a proper introduction. Of course, he doesn't need an introduction to all of you, but I did feel like I should have said that Jared is a not too distant neighbor now. He was he and Katie were up in Virginia, several hours away, but now they're not too far away that they can come down and pay us a visit. They're up in Russellville at the Belgreen congregation up there. Been there since September, is that right? And they are increasing and multiplying, and we're thankful for that. Thankful to get to see their kids and also to hear the good work that they're doing. And just so thankful. When I heard that they were coming in, I talked to the elders and we agreed we should ask them to preach. So we are coming now, and Josh has already introduced, I'm sure, on Wednesday night. We are to the second half of Isaiah, first half about judgment primarily, second half about hope. And some of the most inspiring scriptures in all the Bible. And I know we say that a lot, but I really mean that here. I mean, this is some of the most rich, beautiful material in all of Scripture. And I feel humbled to stand before you and attempt to teach this for you. Now, I said we're going to cover two chapters. That's probably not true, because I want to give a little bit of an introduction to these servant songs. We've come here at the beginning of chapter 42 to the first of four, there's possibly five, servant songs in this part of Isaiah. And the most famous of those servant songs is in chapter 53, where, of course, we read about the suffering servant. But these servant songs that lead up to that one are really important and give us a context for that final one. What are the servant songs? And who is this servant? Well, obviously from Isaiah 53, we use this psalm so often in our teaching, especially when we're talking about the Lord's Supper, to describe the suffering and the pain and the agony that Jesus went through for our sins. And so naturally, all the servant songs should be about Him. But I want you to notice something. Look at chapter 49. This is the second servant psalm. Look at chapter 49 and verse 3. He said to me, "You are my servant, Israel, in whom I will be glorified." The servant there is not identified as an individual. The servant is identified as Israel. Look back at chapter 42. This is what we were about to read, if I continued reading in 42. "Hear you deaf, and look you blind, that you may see. Who is blind but my servant? Or deaf as my messenger whom I send? Who is blind as my dedicated one, or blind as the servant of the Lord? He sees many things but does not observe them. His ears are open but he does not hear." So in 49, the servant is identified as Israel, and that's not the only place. And in 42, in the same context as the first servant song, he speaks of the servant as being something less than perfect, to say the least. And so what do you do with that? And commentators have wrestled with this. In fact, this goes a long way back, all the way back to the first century. What was the question the Ethiopian eunuch asked of the final servant song in Isaiah 53? Who is he talking about? Is the prophet speaking of himself or some other man? Now, he recognizes that this is an individual, and that's one thing we need to keep in mind. Chapter 53 is talking about an individual who suffers for the people, collectively. The traditional Jewish commentary on this is that all of the servant psalms apply to Israel, including Isaiah 53. And you think about Israel as a nation, they've been through a lot of sufferings. And you could say in some ways they were redemptive. However, 53 is definitely talking about an individual. But the comeback could be, well, the other servant songs are not talking about an individual. The other servant songs are talking about a people, specifically Israel. It does not say, by the way, that the servant of Isaiah 53 is the Messiah himself. That is implied, I think correctly implied. But it does not specifically say he is the Messiah. So what do you do with this? All right, so we're going, and if this is the only thing we do, this is going to be profitable this morning. So don't get nervous when I start taking up too much time on this. This is really important that we get this question answered. Turn back with me. We're going to look at several passages here and kind of build an argument. Turn back with me to Genesis chapter 12. This is where it all begins, with God calling Abram to leave his country, to go to this land that he would show him, and he makes these very famous promises. I'll just begin reading in verse 1. The Lord said to Abram, "Go out from your country and from your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make of you a great nation." That's Israel. "And I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you I will curse. And in you," identified in your seed, chapter 22, "in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed." So Abram was chosen to go to this land that he or his descendants after him would possess. From him would become a great nation, and through him, through his seed, all the earth will be blessed. Really important. Keep that in mind. Turn over to Exodus 19. God's people end up in Egypt. They're enslaved for 400 years. God raises up Moses, delivers them out by a mighty hand through the plagues, cross the Red Sea. They come down to Mount Sinai. God makes a covenant with them. And I want you to notice the purpose for which he is making this covenant, what he says his purpose is in Exodus 19. So remember, the promise is through your seed, I'm going to bless all nations. Really important. That's really important to understand what is said about the servant in Isaiah. Exodus 19 and verse 4, "You yourselves," this is God speaking, "you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, all nations, for all the earth is mine. And," verse 6, "you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the people of Israel." Now, I think the sense in which they are being called a kingdom of priests is this. The purpose of the priest was to represent God to the people. Right? He was also to bring the people to God, but he was bringing God to the people. And in Deuteronomy, turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 4, we see that that is exactly what God is intending for his people among the nations, is that they be priests to the nations in the sense that they represent God's holy name to the nations. And Deuteronomy 4, and this is Moses at the end of his life. They're about to enter the promised land. He's telling them to keep the law, and he's telling them why it's so important to keep the law. And I think he's bringing to mind their calling as priests. Here in Deuteronomy 4, he says in verse 6, let me back up to verse 5, "See, I have taught you statutes and rules as the Lord my God commanded me that you should do them in the land that you are entering to take possession of it. Keep them and do them, for this will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of," who? "The peoples, who when they hear all these statutes will say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us whenever we call upon him? And what great nation is there that has statutes and rules so righteous as all this law that I set before you today?" Let me say this. The promise that was made to Abraham could have been accomplished through his people by doing this right here. If they had kept the law, would they have been a blessing to all nations? Absolutely. Because they would be looking at Israel and saying, what a great nation this is. And more than that, what a great God this is that has this special relationship with his people and gives them these wise laws. But did God's people do that? Did they keep the law? Did they honor God and cause his name to be considered holy among all the nations? Did Israel do that? The answer is no. From the time of Judges on, all the history of the kings. In fact, in some of the historical references of how a king did, it would say that they not only lived like the nations around them and worshiped the gods of the nations around them, but they did more than the nations around them in departing from God. They did the very opposite of what God called them to do. And so what does God do? He sends them into captivity. Well, what happens in captivity? Look over to Ezekiel 36. This is a really important text. Ezekiel 36 is going to help you to understand more what the purpose of the God's servant, as described in these servant songs, is to be. In Ezekiel 36, Ezekiel also, by the way, is prophesying in captivity. And the context of 40 through 66 is as if Isaiah himself is now in captivity with the captives, speaking to them. Okay, so this is very similar contextually. So Ezekiel 36 and verse 16, the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, when the house of Israel lived in their own land, they defiled it by their ways and their deeds. That's just talking about the history of God's people in the land. Their ways before me were like the uncleanness of a woman in her menstrual impurity. So I poured out my wrath upon them for the blood that they had shed in the land, for the idols with which they had defiled it. I scattered them among the nations, and they were dispersed through the countries. In accordance with their ways and their deeds, I judged them. But when they came to the nations, wherever they came, this is after the captivity, they've been dispersed by Syria, they've been dispersed by Babylon. When they came to the nations, wherever they came, they profaned my holy name. And that people said of them, these are the people of the Lord. And yet, they had to go out of his land. But I had concern for my holy name, which the house of Israel had profaned among the nations to which they came. Now, obviously, there were glorious exceptions to this rule, Daniel being one of them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Esther. I mean, there are exceptions to this rule, but by and large, they profane God's name. And so what is God going to do? Verse 22, therefore say to the house of Israel, thus says the Lord God, it is not for your sake, O house of Israel, that I'm about to act, but for the sake of my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations to which you came. And I will vindicate the holiness of my great name. Now in Isaiah he'd be saying the Holy One of Israel, right? I will vindicate the holiness of my great name, which has been profaned among the nations and which you have profaned among them. And the nations will know that I am the Lord, declares the Lord God. That's the most common phrase in Ezekiel. They will know I am the Lord. That's the point of Ezekiel. When through you, through Israel, through his people, through you I will vindicate my holiness before their eyes. I will take you from the nations and gather you from all the countries and bring you into your own land. I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you shall be clean from all your uncleanness, and from all your idols I will cleanse you, and I will give you a new heart, and a new spirit I will put within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit, very important, think about Isaiah 40 through 66. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules. You shall dwell in the land that I gave to your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your God. It kind of sounds like Exodus 19, doesn't it? You shall be my people, and I will be my God. And what's the purpose of that? That God's name might be glorified among the nations, and that all the world might know that there is a God in heaven, and that these idols
are worthless. That's the purpose. That's the reason God called Abram. Not just that he could bless him and his family, but through his seed, all the nations of the earth might be blessed. Now, that's the context for Isaiah 40 through 66. That's the context for all these servant songs. When God speaks of Israel being his servant, or when he speaks of this suffering servant. Okay, but that still doesn't answer the question, why Israel in one place and Jesus in another, or this individual, whoever that is. Let me answer that question by going to the New Testament now. Turn over to Matthew chapter 1. This is really cool. Okay, so I'm going to do a Caleb Wilson right now. Caleb Wilson was the guy that would stand up. We were at his wedding last night, by the way. Caleb Wilson was the guy that would get up and he would say, what I'm about to tell you is really important, so you need to listen. And so this is really important. This is big, and this is very, very cool. So Matthew chapter 1 begins the book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, promises made to David, the son of Abraham. And then, when the birth of Christ, or birth of Jesus, is announced to Joseph, notice that he quotes from Isaiah chapter 7. Remember that? In verse 23, verse 22, all this took place to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet. We know that's Isaiah. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which means what? God with us. God is going to be among his people. And then in chapter 2, there are kings, or not kings, but wise men they're called, that come from the east, right? Come from the east. Who would be east of Israel? Most notably mentioned several times in Isaiah. Babylon. These men may have come and may have been influenced by the writings of Isaiah himself. That is entirely a possibility. We know what Cyrus knew. Cyrus was taught by none other than Daniel himself. And Cyrus is mentioned by name in Isaiah 45. I wonder if Daniel sat down with Cyrus and said, hey, Cyrus, let me read something to you that's about you that was written 200 years ago. Here's your name right here. And Cyrus, we're told at the end of Chronicles, the beginning of Ezra, was moved by God himself. We don't know how, but we can assume that it might have been that way. But anyway, these kings come from the east, bringing the wealth of the nations. That's a phrase used at least two or three times here in this section in Isaiah. Bringing the wealth of nations, coming, looking for this king to worship him. Herod hears about that, and what's Herod's response? What's he going to do? Oh no, there's a king, and it's a baby king, so what am I going to do? Kill all the babies. Does that sound familiar at all? Can you think of another time when a jealous, not very secure king started killing babies? Kind of sounds like Pharaoh, doesn't it? Well, Matthew doesn't skip over that or let you think that that's not a coincidence. Because when Jesus is taken by his parents and flee, where do they go to flee? They go to Egypt. And Matthew says this was not coincidental, that out of Egypt came Israel and then out of Egypt comes Jesus. It says in verse 14, and he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. Only the son's not Israel, the son is Jesus. Now, we don't have time, wish we did, but if we went back over and read Hosea chapter 11 where this is quoted from, you wouldn't think this is talking about an individual. You wouldn't be thinking this is talking about a specific person, because Hosea makes it clear that who he's talking about is Israel. He's talking about how God saved his son, Israel, out of Egypt. But Matthew said, that's Jesus. And so it's possible for a prophet to be speaking about Israel collectively and his son, Jesus, at the same time, one and the same.
Let me further strengthen this point from the text. Okay, so chapter 3, we come to John the Baptist. And if you're here on Wednesday night, this should sound very familiar. In those days, John the Baptist came preaching in the wilderness of Judea, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. For this is he who was spoken of by the prophet Isaiah," chapter 40, when he said, "The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his path straight." And so he is preparing the way, Isaiah 40. And then we see that John is baptizing. Jesus comes to be baptized of John. Now, when Paul talks about Israel in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he says that all were baptized in the cloud and in the sea. And what sea was Israel baptized in? Through what water was Israel saved? The Red Sea. They crossed on dry ground and were saved, like Noah and his family were saved through water. They were saved through water. Jesus is baptized in water. And what significant event takes place at his baptism? What takes place here? What does the voice from heaven say? "This is my beloved Son. Out of Egypt I have called my son. This is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased." And what comes down from heaven and alights on his head? The Spirit comes down like a dove. Jesus is anointed with God's Spirit. Isaiah 61. Jesus as God's son, as God's servant, is anointed. He is messiahified, Christified. I mean, that's what Messiah means. It means anointed one. Christ means anointed one. He is anointed not with oil, as a king would be, but he is anointed with God's Spirit. So many references to that in Isaiah. And then in chapter 4, Jesus goes into the wilderness and he's tempted for how many days? 40. How many years was Israel in the wilderness after they were baptized in the sea? 40. And then when Jesus is tempted, every single response that Jesus makes to those temptations comes from Deuteronomy chapter 6 and Deuteronomy chapter 8. In other words, Jesus succeeded where Israel failed. Jesus is the servant. Jesus is the one who will represent God, God with us, Emmanuel. He will represent God to the nations so that all the people might know. He is the seed spoken of to Abraham. "In your seed, I will bless all nations." And that emphasis is made very clear in all these servant songs. And I would suggest to you that when he speaks of Israel being used, he's not just talking about Jesus, but he's talking about the true Israel. And that's the part that gives me chills. I'm getting chills right now. He is saying to every single one of us that you are to me priests, and you are to represent my name to the Gentiles. And there's some thrilling poetry in Isaiah that we're going to get into and talk about. And when we read these, don't read these, just kind of let them wash over you and forget about them. Read these looking at yourself in a mirror and ask yourself, am I that oak of righteousness, the planting of the Lord? Am I being used by God as this righteous seed? Am I showing the nations, or am I just like Israel, right? who profaned my name. I really appreciate the lesson Jared gave. Jesus didn't dance around these things because he knew how important our mission was. So we are given this mission. We are, so Jesus is the servant, but we are his body. We are the fullness of him who fills all in all. We are to be this light, Ephesians chapter 5. We're to walk as children of light. We are to be the light to all the nations that Jesus was and is and what God intended for us to be. And so really important, really important. And we'll flesh out all of these themes and talk about them. But they're what you're going to see, and well, I'm going to get ahead of myself now, but what you're going to see is that he will compare what God is going to do with his people to what he has already done with his people. God saved his people out of Egypt and brought them into this land. And he's about to do a new exodus where he's going to bring his people out of Babylon, both literally and figuratively. Revelation, we're called to leave Babylon. And we're going to be led through this wilderness of temptation, but don't be discouraged. God is going to be with us all the way. He's going to provide for every need. And he's bringing us into the new Jerusalem. He's bringing us into this new heaven, this new earth where righteousness dwells, where we can be what God intended for us to be from the very beginning. Okay. Sermon's over. So, thoughts or questions about that, and then we'll see how far we can get into 42. I just felt like that was really important to establish that foundation. Yeah.
This is not really a topic I equipped much to discuss, because honestly, I didn't even know this was a conversation about
who the servant is. Yeah.
Versus
right.
Right.
I think that prophetic predictions like this are sometimes intentionally vague for the very purpose that we're talking about right now. So take, for example, the promise to David that he would have a son to sit on his throne and that he would build a house for his name. We can obviously see in all of that that's talking about Jesus. It's talking about Solomon, of course, but it's talking about Jesus. But then in that same context, he says, when he sins, I will punish him with the blows of men. When did Jesus ever sin and need to be punished with the blows of men? Never. And he's not even just talking about Solomon. In fact, I think that the son that he's talking about can be talking about just the people. And in fact, in the Psalms, it's treated in that way. In Psalm 89, where he's talking about God's faithfulness to David. And of course, Psalm 89 was written after David's line had come to an end, or it seemingly had come to an end. And so the question is, have you failed to keep your promise to David? Well, in that context, he brings up the promise made to David that he would always have a man to sit on the throne. And he said, when he sins, I will punish him. As if to say, we understand why we're in captivity. We understand why you have disciplined us and taken away, because that's what you said you would do to your son. And so I think it can be speaking of different individuals at different times, almost like the man down in the valley looking at two peaks, two mountain peaks, the first one and then the second one, the lesser and the greater fulfillment. And it can even be speaking individually and collectively at the same time. I know that's not as precise as we would like for language to be, but that's kind of the way poetry is. It's not always, so precise in that way.
Well, again, certainly it can be. I don't think Isaiah 49 is.
Yeah. Yeah, we.
The servant Israel and the collective Israel.
Sure. Sure. And we can look at some of those points as we come to them. Other thoughts about this before we dive in. Yeah.
I basically have a question, but
sure.
I kind of got to explain my thought process.
Okay, go ahead.
I've been trying to grasp this whole idea, and it seems like it would be easy for someone to take it and say God's first plan failed with Israel, so he had to bring Jesus. And in my mind, what I'm seeing is we had to see Israel fail so that we understand that we need Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah,
so just to give an overall, so here's the flow of the servant songs as I see it. So in 42, we're going to see that God's people, God's servant, this was the servant and the ideal, what they were meant to be, what they're going to be eventually. But they haven't lived up to that ideal. And they've been blind and they've been deaf and they've not been paying attention. That idea, the imagery of Isaiah 6, where the people are blind and deaf, is throughout. And that imagery is picked up by Jesus. You know, in the parable of the sower, he says, "I speak to them in parables for this reason: eyes do not see, ears do not hear." So they were intended so that the those who have the right heart would see and hear, and those who didn't would reject it. And so what does God do? Well, he brings in his servant, who is going to suffer, 53, for the sins of his servant, his people, right? And so Israel has not lived up to be what they were called to be. And of course, Isaiah 53, the invitation of 54 and 55 is to all the nations to come and drink of the blessings that God has offered through his son or through his servant. But specifically, I think he is dying and suffering for the failures of his people. His people have not lived up to be this standard. And so this suffering servant is going to come in and suffer for for his people. You know, going on, let's go a little bit farther in Matthew. I want to... It's obvious we're not going to get through all of this anyway. So Matthew 8, this is kind of neat. I think I've brought this up before. But the Sermon on the Mount, and I'm not really sure about this, not everything in Matthew parallels with Exodus, but it's kind of neat that after he goes to the wilderness, he goes up a mountain and he gives the law. So that could be a parallel too. But in chapter 8 and 9, we read about Jesus healing all of these people. And in the midst of all of these healing miracles, we read about him healing Peter's mother-in-law. And in verse 16, that evening they brought to him many who were oppressed by demons, and he cast out the spirits with a word and healed all who were sick. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah: "He took our illnesses and bore our diseases." What chapter is that from in Isaiah? Where did Jesus take our illnesses and bear our diseases? That's 53. Well, that's talking about sin. Well, of course it's talking about sin. But what he's saying is that the reason Jesus did these healing miracles was to show in a physical way what he had come to do spiritually. He had come to cleanse the leper, chapter 8 and verse 1 through 4. He had come to calm the storm, to heal those who were oppressed by demons and the paralytics and those paralyzed. I mean, all of these prefigure sin. And then look over at chapter 12. And in verse 15, Jesus, aware of this, withdrew from there, and many followed him, and he healed them all and ordered them not to make him known. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah: "Behold my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved with whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he will proclaim justice to the Gentiles, to the nations. He will not quarrel or cry aloud, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not quench, until he brings justice to victory, and in his name the Gentiles of the nations will hope." That's Isaiah 42. You see how Matthew's putting all this together? I can almost imagine those two on the road to Emmaus as they're just totally bewildered and perplexed about Jesus being put to death, and you know, they thought he was the one. And it says that Jesus opened their heart to understand the Scriptures. And later when he departed from them, they said, "Did our hearts not burn?" I can imagine him starting with Isaiah 1 and going all the way through, however long it took him on those 7 miles to Emmaus, and opening up their heart to see all of these prophecies that were all about him. Did our hearts not burn? This was God's plan from the beginning. And he's revealed it to us in such wonderful ways. This is why I get excited about Isaiah. This stuff right here. It confirms my faith. It renews my hope. I mean, this is really important stuff for me. So I've failed to cover my assignment, but I don't have to apologize to Josh because he's not going to be here Wednesday night. I can try to move ahead. We're out of time, but questions, other questions you might have or thoughts. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful imagery. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.